Barry Manda and Maud Barlow. Send your check to
the San Francisco Mime Troupe, No Hay Centro, only left and right. And now let's go down to Los Angeles for a talk with what's going on down there. Just recently, a significant court decision came out of that area. A judge threw out the panhandling law in Los Angeles, recently passed by the city council down there this summer, over the opposition of the LA Coalition to End Homelessness and Hunger. So we called up the coordinator of that coalition, Bob Erlenbush, who has also been one of the key groups, he's been the head of one of the key groups, or one of the coordinators of it, interested in and successful in setting up the California Homeless Civil Rights Action Network, which is a kind of a way of establishing communication between homeless rights groups in different cities in California, and indeed, hopefully, up and down the coast and across the country. We're trying to expand that group. Anyway, Bob tells us about the panhandling decision and other things going on in Los Angeles, where they recently had an election, and they probably have the largest population of homeless people in the state.
Okay, we're on the line with Bob Erlenbush of the L.A. Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Robert.
How goes it?
Very cool.
All right. Well, we understand you recently had something of a victory down there in Los Angeles. Even our own hometown Santa Cruz paper reports, I guess it was on the 31st, that, quote, judge says L.A. can't enforce begging ban. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, there was a preliminary injunction against the Los Angeles City's quote-unquote, aggressive panhandling ordinance. And the judge actually basically agreed with us. Part of our logic going before the city council was that most of ordinance did was already existing law, and that was part of what he, the judge, ruled. And the second part was that the rest of it was unconstitutional anyway.
So what is the status for, let's say, the poor person who wants to ask for spare change on the streets of downtown Los Angeles?
Well, right now the status is they're not against the law.
And was that the case, let's say, in January of this year as well?
I'm right. The ordinance didn't go into effect until later this year, you know, the mid-year anyway. So sort of bookended on one end of the year and the other is that the ordinance, I don't think, was passed until...
Somewhere in the summer?
Somewhere in the summer, you're correct.
So, in Santa Cruz, we've had a similar back and forth with panhandling because of a court decision up in San Francisco.
Right.
The Blair decision, I think it was called, regarding a retired or unemployed Metro muni bus driver, actually. But in fact, police frequently make their own decisions on the street how to treat homeless people and what to tell them what the law is.
Right, that's a different issue.
Mm-hmm. What's your sense? Has there been general harassment of poor people who spare change in Los Angeles? Has there been any alteration? What was the reason for this panhandling law? Was it an attempt to make a real change in policy, or was it?
No. It's totally. First of all, it was started off by Mayor Reardon, who was running for mayor.
Right, so it's a sort of an election eve thing?
Right, so, you know, it was total election grandstanding. You know, he's had this whole mantra about quality of life issues for Los Angeles City. So, of course, you know, from his perspective, this was a quality of life issue.
Uh-huh. Sort of like the Mayor Jordan of Los Angeles?
From our perspective, that, you know, the real quality of life issues obviously are, you know, creating jobs for people and affordable housing, and rather than just criminalizing people who are homeless.
How does it look in terms of the election? I guess that's coming up soon, right?
Oh, no, we had the election. We were actually able to make it such a big issue that we stalled it for months and months and months in city council, so it was actually a non-issue when he ran for mayor. But he tried to make it an issue at the point.
And what was the ultimate outcome of the election?
Well, Mayor Reardon was reelected.
Aha. Uh-huh. By a larger majority, smaller majority?
By a majority. It was pretty much a no contest.
And do you anticipate he's going to essentially ignore the homeless issue for the next 4 years until the next election, or is it...
Well, ironically, one of the concessions, if you want to call it that, that we were able to win was that we actually tried to push them through simultaneously, but the city council was split right down the middle. We got a 6-6 vote out of it, which was actually pretty good. What we tried to do was say, hey, if you're going to do this punitive thing, we're against this punitive measure, but B, if you're going to do it, then you have to come up with a proactive policy around trying to address broader issues that this raises around homelessness, like lack of jobs, lack of a living wage, lack of affordable housing, etc. So they actually, put together like a blue ribbon committee to look into how LA City could beef up its more proactive policies around homelessness.
Now, the federal judge who made this ruling was Judge Richard Paez, is that right?
I believe so.
And is he your standard judge? Is this ruling, in your opinion, likely to stand or will be reversed? What's your sense of where it's going?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And is there a time frame? Is it likely to be put on hold for a number of months, or is it a number of weeks? Do we have any sense on that?
The sense of it is that it will be a couple of months before. I know that the LA City Council Mayor Reardon said immediately in the paper that he wanted to appeal the decision.
Mm-hmm.
along with a couple of, but you know how that goes. By the way, by the time it winds its way back through the courts, you know, we'll be into next year.
Do you think Riordan has a real agenda here, or is this just more grandstanding?
Oh no, this was just to look tough on you know, the most vulnerable of our population, as it is in most cities.
Mm-hmm. In Santa Cruz, we're pushing to put an initiative on the 1998 ballot that will make sleeping per se no longer criminal in public places unless there are other violations of the law. What's the situation in Los Angeles legally? Is it legal for a person to fall asleep on public property?
In Los Angeles City, there are no anti-sleeping, anti-camping laws in L.A. City. Now, I should say that Mayor Riordan, that the anti-panhandling ordinance started off as combination of, the most punitive anti-aggressive panhandling proposal in the country. It's, most people didn't realize that there was also a lot of the same language out of Santa Ana.
Uh-huh. What was that language?
The language was to copy Santa Ana's ordinance around anti-sleeping and anti-camping. But we did a lot of work real quick to knock that out altogether.
Uh-huh.
So that was knocked out real quick. So currently, the bottom line is that there is no
So the law is that it's legal to peacefully spare change in Los Angeles.
Right. I mean, part of our point was that you can't do things like follow people and harass them and swear at them. Anyway, that's already against the law. So, mm-hmm.
And so, is there? Is it your sense that the police are in essence following the law and allowing people their rights, or do you think there's harassment of the homeless downtown anyway around this issue?
I think in general, it depends on where up around some of the more shishi restaurants. People are moved along pretty quickly. There isn't like a real lot of tolerance among the police, but for the most part, I think it's just moving people along is what we've heard out on the street.
You said you were able to successfully put off this law for several months, and then what kind of a vote did you get on the LA Council or LA Board, whatever that was?
Ultimately, I think it was. I think it was 7-5.
So you had a fairly close vote.
It was a fairly split decision among the board, the Los Angeles City Council.
Mm-hmm. Are there any things like sitting bans or, sitting bans have made the kind of newspapers in San Jose, Palo Alto,
right,
Santa Monica. Is that happening in Los Angeles at all?
Not Los Angeles City.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, that's good news. Any general comments about the state of civil rights for poor people in Los Angeles that we should know about?
Any general comments?
Yeah. For example, is there any proactive action being taken, let's say, to secure a Bill of Rights for homeless people in Los Angeles?
Not exactly.
Mm-hmm. I know that the LA Coalition of to End Hunger and Homelessness put out a wonderful set of guidelines about panhandling, talking about...
Oh, right. Our
that was about, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
A couple of years ago, yeah.
That's great. I've been trying to pass that on to chambers of commerce wherever I go.
Yeah, we had pretty wide distribution of that. We did another one when the whole issue of encampments came up around safe zones.
Mm-hmm.
One of my staff people, Pete White, has put together a real good sort of self-advocacy card, a Know Your Rights, Know Your Street Rights card.
Mm-hmm. Good for California or good for the U.S.?
No, just for Los Angeles County.
Gotcha.
Right. And so, we're in the process of printing up about 5 or 10,000 of those and getting them out on the streets for people,
mm-hmm,
so they can do some self-advocacy. Let's see what else. We have put in place, a grievance procedure inside inside of a local agency. It's the joint authority between the city and the county. So we have a grievance procedure that homeless people, if they think their civil rights or whatever have been violated by shelter providers, have a way to formally grieve the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess finally, in a broader, we, along mostly with ACORN, have developed a workers' bill of rights, like for people who are on workfare.
ACORN is... Bob?
I'm trying to think of what ACORN stands for.
It's what is it, in fact? What kind of an organization?
It's a grassroots community organizing group.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
So, at any rate, we are working with ACORN, and they've been very effective at putting together a workfare bill of rights.
Well, that brings us to another subject. Maybe you can comment on it briefly. The impact of the destruction of the welfare safety net and TANF statewide, as well as the governor's latest brouhaha around opening the armories. Any comment on those two issues?
We did great organizing. We bought a full-page ad in the West Coast edition of the New York Times. We put a lot of pressure on the governor to open up the armories. So that was, pretty successful. Most people didn't realize, and we were able to educate our policymakers, that 43% of the total bed nights each year in Los Angeles County are provided by the armory. So they're like a significant part of, the emergency shelter system, up and down the state.
The armories are now open if the weather is sufficiently cold and wet.
And fortunately in L.A. today it's about 95 degrees, but theoretically they're open.
And what about the other issue, that of the welfare cuts?
Well, that's a whole much, much broader issue around, how it plays out over the next couple of months. But for the most part, we're doing everything we can to make sure that, because there's two issues. What's allowable within the law to make sure that the counties provide the maximum protection that they can to women and children and illegal immigrants, et cetera, under the law. And then the next point is how to change the law to make it, to make it more less punitive than it is now.
In Santa Cruz, there were a number of welfare folks who felt that the county should just opt out of the governor's system because it was such a fraud,
right,
and would bankrupt the county and lead to essentially nothing. What is your sense about Los Angeles and how it affects L.A. County?
Well, I mean, how it affects the country. I mean, 21/5 of the total impact of welfare reform nationally, both TANF and immigration changes for legal immigrants on food stamps, it plays itself out in L.A. County. So 20% of the entire impact of national welfare reform is in our county. So, it's just tremendously... It's like a national laboratory of how to be punitive towards women and children and people on general relief and legal immigrants.
What's your reaction to claims that in places like, Michigan, welfare rolls have been effectively cut, showing in some sense the, quote, success of the program?
Oh, I mean, that's absurd. I mean, my coming back would be prove it. Any governor who claims that, show me where people are living, show me the jobs, show me that they're being paid a living wage, and then I'll believe it. Anything short of that, it just bunk.
In Eureka, you probably know recently, the homeless community of the Paradise Beach or South Spit Jetty were evicted in the face of a court settlement that supposedly allowed them to remain on the federal property there until such time as they got permanent housing. And today, on November 3rd, they're about to be evicted from their temporary housing, those of them that are still around in hotels and in a kind of makeshift campground on the North Jetty. Did you have any reaction to that particular situation?
In what way?
In the sense that, I guess, homeless providers throughout the state, some of them have contacted Eureka health authorities and said to them, what are you doing, evicting homeless people in this situation, because while it's 95 in Eureka, I understand several days ago it was cold and raining. I mean, 95 in Los Angeles, it was
right.
Cold and raining in Eureka. And these folks have been there, for many of them, for a decade, and had their own houses,
wow,
and mobile houses that they, you know, they weren't very mobile, but they had hot and cold running water, and they had their own toilets in their houses and their, you know, their vehicles. And now they're out. I'm just wondering, what's your reaction as you look at it from another county? Any comments?
Well, in general, you know, I mean, this is just one more way to be punitive to low-income people. I mean, the ideal situation, of course, would be that people would have, you know, not live in substandard housing or feel that they had to live in encampments or whatever. But given that government policy, A, doesn't provide living wages to people, B, doesn't provide any health care, C, doesn't provide affordable housing, and then to swoop into an encampment and dismantle it without any, you know, without any real alternatives is really irresponsible.
Well, we're talking to Bob Erlenbush of the LA Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness. Do I have that right?
Sure do.
Anything else you want to advise us on around issues of civil rights for the homeless in the Los Angeles area?
No, I think we covered a broad array of issues.
Cool. Thank you.
And that's what's going on down in L.A., according to Bob Erlenbush. Interestingly enough, L.A., as you heard, has no sleeping ban. The same is true of Oakland, by the way. San Jose does have one. And, of course, so does our beloved Santa Cruz, at least until November 1998, when hopefully that matter will be laid to rest, a well-deserved rest by the voters of this city, who will rule that it's okay for people to sleep if they have no legal place to be, and okay for them to cover up with blankets if they're not engaging in other kinds of criminal behavior. Let's return now to Food Not Bombs in San Jose. You, of course, listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And in case you want to get in touch with our station with a public interest announcement or message, 2 minutes we'll give you on the air. Give us a call at 427-4523 and leave a message 2 minutes long or less, and we will broadcast that for the community's notice. Or you can write us at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. This is a station that really relies heavily on a few people right now. We used to have a much broader collective, but that didn't work. We kind of lost our lodging. We lost our station for a while there. Now we're coming back, and we're coming back strong. And with your support, hey, maybe we can even become a 24-hour-a-day station again. I think that would be really great. Santa Cruz needs that kind of a station. Right now we're on weekends and evenings. So send your cards and letters, your condolences and your checks, your thoughts and your criticisms to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061, or just call in directly, investing 35 cents, if you can find the money in a local payphone, to 427-4523. If you want to refer to anything that's actually happened on this particular program, and this program is called Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, you can leave a message for me at 423-4833, 423-4833, and I also want to let you know that the new Street Spirits, for those of you homeless vendors who want to sell the Street Spirit, the new Street Spirit newspapers are out, and you can get them by giving me a call at 423-4833 or looking for the guy with the beard and the belly down on Pacific Avenue. You'll see me wandering around, usually with a Free Radio Santa Cruz t-shirt or some other colorful costume. I was wearing my bathrobe last night when the police arrested and ticketed me. They didn't actually arrest me physically or take me to jail, but I was briefly held under arrest while I was given this completely bogus ticket. I was like 15 feet from the street. I wasn't really in the park at all, and I was given no opportunity to leave, and other people who were there weren't given tickets, so it seemed that, perhaps I'm a bit paranoid, but it seemed that I was singled out because I had the camera. In fact, I didn't have a camera. I had an audio tape recorder, my trusty little machine. And the guy with me, Matt Dodd of the Coalition on Homelessness, had a video camera, and he was given a ticket as well. So only the people with media were given tickets, which is, I mean, I suppose it's good that the homeless people in that particular group weren't given tickets, but they were running around harassing them big time. There, as I said, there were Jeeps and vans and nobody on horses that time of night. You frequently find cops on horses in Golden Gate Park, but it was quite active, and actually we went into the park again, I and Mara of the Coalition on Homelessness, to look for Matt, who had gone stalking police officers with his camcorder. And you know, we get to see spotlights, police running around with their spotlights on people and so forth, and really quite a major production. For those of you who have been following it, a completely bogus major production. And we're going to be turning to that after we look at San Jose. San Jose, as I mentioned before, is also attempting to oust its homeless people through sitting bans and now going after Food Not Bombs in St. James Park with threats of arrest. And there was no arrest last night, but we think that on Saturday at 1 o'clock at their meal at 1st and St. John's, St. James Park, between 1st and 2nd, actually, on St. John Street, is where this bust is going to happen, because the police have come two weekends in a row and threatened the Food Not Bombs folks with ticketing if they don't stop, claiming that they don't have a permit. So let's go now to San Jose and hear what some of the folks there, the clients, the locals, the activists, had to say about it.
Well, St. James Park is situated divided by a railroad track and a single lane of road, and lots of cops on horseback, about five or six, four on the, I guess it's the south side of the park or the far side of the park, and a couple others down here, over by, looks like 2nd Street perhaps, not sure, it's looking. In St. James Park, talking to
Erica.
Erica, you just arrived on your bike. Are you connected with Food Not Bombs?
I don't know.
I mean, do you eat their food?
Well, yeah. When they passed it out to me in the park, and I had the munchies, hell yeah.
And how long have they been serving here? You know. Or how long have you been eating
as
here?
As long as a long time. Shit, I don't know. Geez, I don't know.
That's okay.
I can cuss, right?
You can cuss.
Oh, fucking right.
So,
Are you living outside? Yes,
or,
I am.
And how is that treating you?
The days are nice, but the nights are cold. You know, beer warms you up. Marijuana helps you relax. You know. But
now, you're young. You're attractive. You look vulnerable. Are you? Can you take care of yourself?
Yes, I am. I'm dangerous. In fact, I have steel toes and knives and fucking.
So you kick ass.
Sharp little knuckles. Yeah, hell
so
yeah.
You aren't in a position where any would-be rapist can just walk right in.
I definitely hope not. If there is a situation like that, I'm gonna fight for my life, do whatever I can to get away from it. Hell yeah, but.
How long have you been outside on your own?
Geez, I've been living on the streets since I was like 12 in Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz?
Downtown Pacific Avenue.
How old are you now?
I'll be 19 in less than a month.
7 years.
Yeah.
And is it getting wearisome being outside, or do you like it?
The more I fry and the more I shroom, it gets kind of weird, but I mean, I stopped messing around with crank when I was about 16. And, I don't know, I get drunk a lot, and I get pretty stoned, but I mean, drunk is the worst fucking problem I have now, because I always black out. I suggest you smoking pot.
In Santa Cruz, we have a lot of heroin use recently.
Yeah.
Is that happening here in San Jose?
I try not to associate with people like that, but I do see it. I don't get too deep into it, but when I do see it, I try to stay away from it. I let them know that I don't approve of it. None of my friends are heroin users. I won't hang out with people like that.
Do you squat?
Do I squat? Sometimes. When it's absolutely necessary. Sometimes we'll just pass out in the bushes.
In San
you know,
Jose?
Drunk, yeah.
Now, they have a law against sitting down on the sidewalks in San Jose.
No.
Have you been hassled under that law?
They've just told us to get up and leave. You know, first time around, and we'll usually be getting up on her, you know, be standing up on her their second time around, so they can't really fuck with us. They'll tell us to get up, and we'll, you know, the second time they drive around, we'll just be getting up, and they'll just be like, oh, okay, they're going. We never really have a problem with that.
So you don't know people will get tickets?
Yeah, I do. I know a lot of my friends get tickets. I got a ticket for urinating in public and carrying an alcoholic beverage the other day from an undercover cop.
I see.
Yeah.
So are there restrooms, public restrooms you can use if you want to take a picture?
Yeah, but I mean, they don't like people such as ourselves. They don't, you didn't purchase anything here. They give us your looks, they treat us like shit, you know, they're all fucked up about it. But, I mean, there are public restrooms, but you just get hassled too much. And I think, being my own self, I like to piss in public because I don't like to pull out those little paper shields you put over the toilet. I just like to squat and piss. It's much easier. But
piss like a woman.
Piss like a woman.
There you're talking.
Yeah, there we go.
7 years. What's different from when you were 12? How have things changed?
I was a lot more vulnerable when I was about that age, like 12, 13.
Why did you leave home?
Why did I leave home? I got kicked out of home, sent to a group home, ran away from that, ended up on the streets, Pacific Avenue, Santa Cruz.
How long did you stay in Santa Cruz?
For as long as I could until I got arrested again.
Are you currently in trouble with the law?
No, I'm on probation now. I'm almost 19. I'll be 19 in less than a month on Pearl Harbor Day. And I'm just chilling.
What are your plans for the future?
I really like to be a marine biologist or that's my number one dream in life, to be a marine biologist. But I'm kind of slacking right now because I'm smoking too much pot and drinking too much beer. I'm on kind of a vacation right now.
Are you in love?
Yes, I am.
Could that be the reason?
Huh?
Could that be the reason you're slacking?
Well, yeah, I guess. In some ways, you can look at it from that perspective.
But you will return to him.
I am in love, and I am happy, and I'm kind of taking a break, kind of feeling it right now, you know?
Are you monogamous or polygamous?
Huh?
You believe in a one-on-one relationship, or do you
believe? One-on-one relationship, definitely.
Just testing.
Okay, no problem. I'm okay.
Police were here, I guess, on Saturday. Police harassed Food Not Bombs. Were you here when that happened?
Not this Saturday. No, I was out of town this Saturday.
Okay.
So San Francisco.
We're wondering if they're going to do that again. That's why we're here from Santa Cruz.
They probably do. They probably will, because I've been around here, and they've been most helpful to us.
Food Not Bombs.
Yeah.
Not the police.
No, not the... Fuck the police!
A lot of cops on horses run. Is this some sort of... why all these horsey cops?
I know this isn't true whatsoever, but I mean, I hate the police, and I'd like to say anything bad about them as much as I can. They're just torturing the horses right now. That's all they're doing, as far as I'm concerned. They're not helping any. They're just fucking torturing the horses because it's cold weather and animals should be protected.
Well, I guess horses make police look bigger, and they also, I guess, there's a certain mobility in the park you can't have on a squad car or something.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. The interview with that woman was yesterday in San Jose at St. James Park, where Food Not Bombs serves every Wednesday at 5 and every Saturday at 1. If you want to be involved, by the way, in resisting upcoming police harassment of Food Not Bombs, and we're afraid that's just what's on the agenda, give me a call at 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. Headquarters for Santa Cruz's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can also give a call directly to San Jose to Lennox and Larry at 257-9424, 257-9424, to help them out, because they may need it. They may need witnesses. They may need folks willing to step in and serve food. They may need people who can see what's going on and testify about it later. That's San Jose Food Not Bombs. We're going to skip back to Santa Cruz for a moment now and our very own police situation down here on the Pacific Mall. We discussed this incident, which I didn't see, but was reported to me, and you're going to hear that report last show, and it involves action by Officer Brandt and his police dog. And here is an account of what happened.
Talking to Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hello. How you doing?
It's about 9:20 here at Cathcart and Pacific. And Jason, you said that you are carrying a complaint to the Internal Affairs Department of our Santa Cruz Police Force.
Correct.
What's this all about?
Officer Brandt threatening to have his canine dog attack me and eat me and tear me up. because he can.
So, when did this happen, supposedly?
A couple nights ago.
And where did it happen?
Right here on the corner.
And what were the circumstances?
He walked by with his dog, and my friend went like that, and he walked up to him, and I told him that it's against the law to antagonize a police dog, which is true. But then he told him that if he ever did it again, he was going to let his dog attack him and tear him up. And I told him that's against the law. And he says, "Oh yeah, well I'll let him tear you up too." And he was like right in my face like that, you know, just screaming at me, poking me in the chest with his flashlight, telling me he's going to let his dog tear me up and da 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 da. And I just kind of ignored him and let him walk away.
Who was your friend?
My friend Rob. He's not here right now.
And were you a witness to this?
Yes.
And your name, sir?
Gary.
Gary, you going to file a supporting statement to this complaint?
If I must.
Indeed. And again, today is Thursday evening. When was this?
It's probably like, what, Monday? Yeah, like Monday.
And about what time?
About like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, somewhere in there.
Seated or standing?
I was standing up. And I just told him it was against the law for him to threaten someone with his police dog, because that's like him telling me that he's going to shoot me with his gun because I called him a pig, you know? That's totally against the law, you know? He wouldn't like it very much if I told him I was going to shoot him for calling me a dirty hippie, you know?
Well, and you intend to carry, and you actually have gone to the police department,
yeah,
you found out.
The police department, talked to him. I just need to talk to him and get his badge number and his name and everything
Officer
so I can...
Brandt. Actually, the police department knows his badge number.
Yeah, I'd rather ask him so he knows that I'm filing the complaint against him.
Cool. Well, if you...
That way, if he tries to intimidate me for it, I can file that on there, too.
Keep an eye on this guy. If anything happens to him, call me at 423-HUFF. H-U-F-F. What do you saw about this?
Just pretty much what he said. When the dog walked by with the officer and the other partner, the one kid started barking, just nonchalant, woo, 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 barking. And the cop stopped, came back, and started yelling. And he nonchalantly said, "You can't threaten him with your dog." And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And got about an inch from his face and started screaming on top of his lungs to where the veins were bulging in his temples. And I was just like, look at this guy. He's going to snap. The guy shouldn't even be an officer. If he's not in control of his own behavior, he should not be an officer. Plain and simple.
Plain and simple. Interesting enough, I saw Officer Brandt. It was either that evening or the next night, coming into the coffee roasting company, which he often does. I usually make comments about Officer Brandt and his dog when I see them, because I don't think it's appropriate to have a dog downtown on the mall this way.
First of all, his dog also looks very malnutrition, and I should know, I worked as a vet tech for 3 years. The dog doesn't look like it's fed very well, doesn't look like it's very well taken care of. It's skin and bones. I mean, it's nothing. He doesn't take care of the dog at all. It's very inhumane, the way that he's treated.
Off the record.
Dogs aren't allowed on the mall. What are dogs doing on the mall?
He's not a dog. He's an officer.
He's an officer of the law. You know, that's how he gets.
And that's there's a shaggy story.
One day, Officer Brandt walks up to me. He'd just gotten his dog. His dog was maybe 3 days old. He goes, looks right at me. He goes, "Would you like to meet my nice puppy?" I was like, "Yes, I would." And I let him sniff my hand, scratched him on his head. And the officer saw that I made friends with his dog and freaked out on me. I thought he was going to beat me up.
What did he do?
"Don't you ever touch an officer of the law. I can throw you in jail for that."
How long ago was this?
About right after he got the dog.
Which was
a month or so ago.
But first he invited you to meet the dog?
He offered. He was like, "Would you like to meet my nice puppy dog?" I was like, "Sure." And I reached out, let him sniff my hand. And he sniffed my hand, and I scratched him on his head. And he was like, "Oh, like a dog is, you know?" And then the officer freaked out on me because I made friends with his dog.
He didn't like that.
No,
you're not
at all.
Supposed to be friends.
Exactly.
But Dan, how's it going, man?
Good. How's school going?
All right. Can I talk to you a second?
Yes.
Talking to Gary.
Great. You not only observed this harassment incident with the dog, but you've had yourself problems with a vehicle recently.
Oh, most definitely.
What happened?
I was coming down the one into Santa Cruz about 10 o'clock in the morning, about 2 weeks ago, Monday morning. And when I approached the traffic light on Bay Street, I was right behind a highway patrol officer. But before I came to a stop, I pulled in the lane right next to him and turned right on red. Well, by the time I got to the railroad tracks over by the sewage treatment plant,
Bay in California,
he was on me and pulled me over. So I pulled over, showed him my driver's license, the registered vehicle registration, and the vehicle is not in my name. It's in a girl's name because I just bought the vehicle. It's still current.
Did he say why he pulled you over?
No. It's still current until 1999.
He stated that the reason he pulled us over was that the license plates were reported lost or stolen.
He said the license plates were reported lost or stolen. So he proceeded to go through the vehicle. They ran our registration. They ran our names, our warrant checks, all that. Let us go, wrote us a ticket for possession of pot, took our glass pipes, and left.
And took your license plates.
And took my license plates. Well, the next day, Monday, I went into the Department of Motor Vehicles in Capitola, gave them my registration, gave them my driver's license, and they checked the record of my vehicle, and they said, there's no reason they should have taken your plates. We can't find anything wrong with it. Those plates belong to that vehicle.
The highway patrol officer who did this also said something to you before he left.
Yeah, he said we were targets.
He used those words.
Oh, uh-huh. Definitely.
He said, do you know what a target is? And I'm like, yeah, us now. Since you took our license plates, because now we're driving around in an untagged vehicle, getting pulled over once a day at least.
And are you in fact getting pulled over?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. Well, not actually pulled over, but we've been standing by the vehicle, and cops have asked us about it, and you know, checking if it's stolen or not, run the VIN numbers, write the registration, and they have a report on file that the car does belong to Gary.
And they took a picture
and
of me next to my Suburban, and to identify me with the vehicle with no plates on it.
So it's fun and games with the police in Santa Cruz and the environs. California Highway Patrol officers, Officer Brand and his dog, capers downtown in Santa Cruz that really the community has to respond to. And what have we got as a forum to respond to it to? Well, we have the Citizens Police Review Board of the City of Santa Cruz. Pretty sad situation. That's a board that meets once a month, and that's tomorrow, folks. Tomorrow at 5 o'clock. You want to talk to the board about what the police have done to you, your friends, or people you don't know, but perhaps don't like what has been done, come on down at 5:30 and use what's called the oral communications period to speak to that Citizens Police Review Board. That's at City Hall in downtown Santa Cruz, right across from the main library and across from the Civic Auditorium. That's the Citizens Police Review Board. Of course, you can file a complaint against a police officer for misconduct, even one whose badge number you don't know, even if you aren't even personally involved in the incident, but simply observed it. And very few complaints are being filed, I'm afraid. I don't think that it's because there aren't complaints. You hear quite a few complaints on this show, at least half a dozen per month. I would say even more than that, since I do a show now twice weekly. People are afraid to come out and complain. Ironically, they don't mind complaining over the radio. So if you don't mind complaining over the radio, I encourage you to go to the Citizens Police Review Board and file a complaint, not because you have an expectation, because you shouldn't have an expectation, that the Police Review Board is going to do anything, but rather, as I've often said, to create a record, because we need to establish a paper trail on these guys and on these women, although mostly it's men that are doing this kind of abuse here in Santa Cruz on the police force. I'm also encouraging folks to get involved in the project that I've begun called Know Your Rights. Know Your Rights is essentially a project to prepare a one-page sheet that talks about the rights of folks on the streets in Santa Cruz. You've probably seen this kind of thing before, distributed by the American Civil Liberties Union or the National Lawyers Guild or other organizations. It talks about you have the right to remain silent, you have the right to have an attorney appointed for you, and so forth. And, of course, these are rights, many people know about them, but there are other rights that folks aren't really too well acquainted with. In fact, even I was surprised to hear some of the rights as discussed by public defender Ed Chun, an attorney with the Public Defender's Office of the county, who talked to the Citizens Police Review Board last month. And I called Mr. Chun, and he's agreed to kind of go over this Know Your Rights list and see what he thinks. Infraction ticket. The infraction is the lowest kind of ticket. It's the most minor offense. Above it is a misdemeanor, and above that is a felony. If you're given an infraction ticket, police officers have no right to search you. This is something I was never aware of. I thought that any arrest could be the basis for a search, and that an arrest, though you didn't get taken to jail, was actually happening when you were being written a ticket. Now, it is true you are being arrested when an officer is writing you an infraction ticket. However, that is not a custodial arrest, according to public defender Ed Chun. Rather, that is a sort of an arrest simply for the purpose of writing. It's a non-custodial arrest for writing a ticket. Hence, police officers have no right searching you. If you're being arrested, police can search you thoroughly. That is their right. However, that whole arrest process puts the police in a situation of some legal vulnerability. If they arrest you improperly, that's a false arrest. And then, presumably, if you have the resources, and if it's blatant enough, or if you have the support, then you can take them to court for that action and get some sort of compensation. And that occasionally happens, though not very often. However, they cannot search you if they are detaining you. And this is really the area where Know Your Rights, the flyer I hope to have out on the street soon, I need some help making, if anybody wants to help me out. If you do, give me a call at 423-4833. I need some help making this flyer, and we're going to be focusing on detentions, because that is what's happening up and down Pacific Avenue and in Santa Cruz generally. Police officers do not arrest people when they stop and question them. They, quote, detain them, which means that they essentially say, you can't leave because I've got questions to ask you, or I want to look things over here, and so forth. The only legitimate basis for a detention, according to the public defenders testifying before the Citizens Police Review Board, is to determine if a crime has been committed, and you need the standard of what's called reasonable suspicion, a lower standard than the standard for arrest, which is probable cause. Reasonable suspicion is the standard for detention. And the purpose of a detention is to determine, A, if a crime has been committed, and B, if there is probable cause to arrest you based on some other factors. Like, for instance, if you're accused of shoplifting, you can be detained long enough for somebody to run to the store, bring somebody over to say if you are they want to identify you as the person. So that's the basis for a detention rather than an arrest. Although, for example, in the case of Ricky Prim, who was arrested at the Cat and Canary and accused of shoplifting, twice arrested apparently. That case is still hanging. I understand he's still looking for a lawyer. I haven't really heard what's happened. Ricky, if you're listening, call in, please, 423-HUFF. It's a sort of a question of some racial discrimination. That's what Prim claimed. The owners of Cat and Canary denied it, and there was a big brouhaha around it. My decision was that he certainly was improperly arrested, and he was owed some kind of compensation, which apparently the owners were unwilling to do. That's another matter. Getting back to this issue of Know Your Rights, the question of detention on the streets is a very important one, because Chen also said some things that show that common police practices in Santa Cruz are improper. For instance, he stated that if a police officer wants to pat you down for weapons, which police officers frequently do, he has to have articulable facts that would indicate he can reasonably believe you may be a threat to his armed and dangerous. Actually, that was the phrase that was used. You are armed and dangerous. If he has no specific facts to support this, like, say, a report you had a gun, he cannot pat you down, even on a detention. Again, if you're arrested, you can be thoroughly searched as well as pat down. So when a cop says, I'm detaining you and I'm just going to pat you down for weapons and ask, mind if I pat you down, you can say, no, I do mind. Unless you can specify why you think I'm armed and dangerous. Tell me why you think I'm armed and dangerous. If you can't do that, the pat search is illegal, according to public defender Ed Chun. So these are all facts, I think, that should be much more widely known in Santa Cruz on the Avenue by young and old alike, particularly by the young, because the young are getting the big hassle these days downtown. You cannot be patted down, period, unless the officer has specific facts that he wishes to state that lead him to believe you are armed and dangerous. He can't just pat you down for the hell of it as a matter of procedure or policy. Again, that's unless he's arresting you, then he can pat you down and search you. If he does have reason to believe you're armed and dangerous, according to public defender Ed Chun, he has the right to pat you down for weapons, but he cannot put his hands inside pockets. He cannot feel around the shape of items in order to search for contraband. So if any of that happens, and for example, you're being subject to a search, you should say in a loud, clear, but unthreatening voice, I am being illegally searched,
I'm not being patted down. The officer is feeling inside my pockets, if he is, and the officer is groping about looking for items which he has no right to search for. Now, a lot of this, and a lot of my concern around this, is that if we were living in a society where there was an armed secret society devoted to, let's say, killing Jews, or killing non-Muslims, or doing something horrendous like that, and we're carrying around a lot of secret weapons, and there was some basis for some kind of martial law, or suspending the Constitution, or even giving police more power, I would tend to be much more sympathetic, because there would be a real justification for this kind of behavior by police. But we aren't living in that kind of society. We're living in a society where the reasons that police do this have to do with the fact that they're under orders from merchants and politicians who want to establish a certain, quote, quality of life downtown. That's part of it. Another part of it is we're under a system of drug prohibition whereby it is illegal for people to use, possess, sell, or cultivate what authorities choose to call drugs. Some of us call herbs, but indeed we can also talk about drugs, so-called hard drugs like heroin, amphetamines, crack, and so forth, drugs that have limited positive uses. But the question of whether the entire country should be turned into a police state and millions of people put in jail around this issue and civil liberties essentially cut down to a fraction of what they were is a question to which I have a clear answer, and many of us do, and the answer is no. There is no justification, and drugs becomes the justification for expanded police power, and also then becomes the basis for funding police departments. In a way, this is a whole different issue than poverty. But because it gives the police the power to hassle people for poverty, and because people who are poor are often those who, to make money, sell contraband substances like drugs, it's an issue that I have to raise. And I'd like to raise the issue of the rights of folks on the mall, because, hey, I see too much police abuse happening, too much improper policy, and I don't think, unless we raise our voices really loudly on this issue and really clearly, that we're going to get any changes. And we need changes on this issue. So if you're interested in being a part of this Know Your Rights project, helping me put together a simple handout that articulates what the rights of a person is, what those rights are on the street, give me a call at 423-4833. 423-4833.
When the carpenters quit, this was only a shell. I wanna make it my own, so I'm working like hell. Work the GE plant till 11 or 12. Then I'm home hanging sheet rocking, working on the train. When the plant lays me off for a hard lot's week, I take a job at a club and I'm dancing for a week. It's the way to make a living, but the kids gotta eat, and I always seem to make my own way. You better take me as you find me. Just cause you find me don't mean you can't take me. If you can't take the way you find me, you can just be me alone. I put a lot of living behind me, seen some hard times, they didn't break me. You better take me as you find me, building my door and me alone. Driving home from the swing ship, I need a vacation. Cop pulls me over, one more aggravation. Let me see your license and registration. Pull up behind that building over there. He sticks his head in the window, starts making moves on me. Jump back, Jack. You know you don't scare me. I'd love to tell your story to some jury. Leave them in the dust, make my weary way home. You better take me as you find me. Just cause you find me don't mean you can take me. If you can't take the way you find me, buddy, better leave me alone. I put a lot of living behind me. Seen some hard times, they didn't break me. You better take me as you find me, building my door and me feel at home. Well, my pay stays the same, but my grocery bill's rising. Getting mighty weary of this free enterprise. Took a notion in my head, do a little organizing. So I start talking union to the people at the plant. The foreman says, sister, you're drawing your pay here. We ain't subsidizing no normal rate here. I'll keep talking union as long as I stay here. I think we're gonna see it someday.
Now let's return to Santa Cruz and the city council meeting last Tuesday, where issues of police funding came up. And speaking on those issues were none other than your very own Bathrobe Spear Robert here. Again, Bathrobe Spear for all you newcomers, because I tend to wear a bathrobe, as I did last night when I'm out there in the parks or in demonstrations, essentially presenting the visual question, where can people sleep? But here's the issue of police in front of the Santa Cruz City Council. And the first question was a large appropriation for two cops coming from a federal grant.
Proxy number 12 is acceptance of a cops grant fund, budget modification, and budget adjustment. And this is pulled by both Robert Morris and David Silva. So if you just briefly let us know your issues.
My name is David Silva, and I kind of need to speak against apple pie, but sometimes it's time to say, you know, enough dessert. I've been doing a lot of tabling on the avenue around the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban and Green Registration, and I've been hearing way too many stories, and I've reported this to the Police Review Board about police abuse and bad police behavior. Of course, we have some bad laws always make for bad cops, but, like the sleeping ban. But there's a couple of things that I personally happened to me that I would like to talk about. I was setting up a green registration table, and Officer LeFevre, and my mind just went blank. Anyway, Officer Young came up to me and asked me what I was doing, and I quickly pulled out my Section 10.65.10 Municipal Code, which was given to me by the Washington Manor, and explained to them that I was within my rights to be registering voters and setting up the table. And then they said, "Oh, fine. You're the good guys. Then it's just these dirty people and these people that are trying to bring down the government and the people that we don't, you know, like politically, we would want to get off the avenue." And to me, I really took an affront to that, because that's a real strict, serious violation of the Constitution. And so, if we're going to be having more police, we should not only have quantity, we should have quality. And I think it's incumbent upon you. You know, I encourage you to go ahead and accept the money for cops. But also it's incumbent upon me to have some kind of training to make sure that these police officers are doing a job and respecting the constitutional rights. I will praise a couple police officers who recently, a few months ago, in the Beach Flats, stopped the Seaside Company and its security forces from violating people's constitutional rights, and understood that they were not going to arrest those people that the Seaside Company is after. So there are, you know, there's a mixture of people in the police department. But it seems that the number of complaints I've heard, and it's been a large number of complaints of police abuse I've heard lately, that it's incumbent upon them, accepting this money, to do something about retraining or making sure that they're trained for understanding constitutional rights of citizens. Thank you.
Councilmembers, my name is Robert Morris, and I work for SPAN, Green Stop Police Abuse Now, a local group concerned with police conduct and police misconduct. Recently, the Citizens Police Review Board was addressed by one of the public defenders concerned with the kinds of abuses that Mr. Silva last spoke of. I believe this grant is not in of itself a bad thing, but I think that the police department has to make sure the new officers that it's bringing onto the force don't necessarily follow in the footsteps of the old officers. For instance, downtown, it is, according to one of our public defenders who speaks to the issue to the Census Police Review Board and actually briefed them in private afterward, the rights of defendants of individuals in the public not to be searched downtown have to be secure in their persons, properties, and effects. is something that they retain, even though police officers have been detaining them and, in fact, illegally searching backpacks, people's belongings, and so forth, particularly among young people. Even pat-down searches are not legal unless an officer believes it has articulable facts to show and to present to a court that he believes that an individual is harmed and dangerous. You cannot regularly search people on the mall, and the police force seems to be doing this, and I'd like to see that these funds are not used for that purpose. Even more serious are actions by those officers like Officer Grant, this police dog, who I'm told by two men who gave their names to me and are prepared to file complaints. They were specifically threatened with attack by these dogs should they make further comments about the dog. This is not appropriate behavior for Officer Grant or his dogs. He needs retraining, and so do his dogs, who he calls officers. That's fine. I'm sure that the dog may be perhaps in this situation more suitable than he. This funding is apparently intended to go to Beach Flats positions, is that right? Yes. Police patrol officers in the beach area. Perhaps on the east side might be appropriate in order to rein in rampaging council members, like Council Member Hernandez, who himself removed $8,000 worth of posters, and it took us a month to hear about this from the Santa Cruz Sentinel. They sat on that for quite a while. I'm glad it eventually did appear. Certainly, I think that the enforcement of the law should be even-handed among both rich and poor. If I removed $8,000 worth of posters, I would be in jail. Thank you.
I will comment on that at this time. You of all people, Robert, should know that what you mean to me is necessarily all true. Anybody who buys four posters for $8,000 need to have dead seven anyway. It wasn't $8,000 worth of posters put on the wall. It was an ad campaign that someone paid $8,000 for. Okay, thank you.
And that was Michael Hernandez responding to my criticism of, should we say, differential police treatment for city council members and everybody else around the issue of Hernandez's vandalizing of posters up by, I guess it was the new former Ebert's department store. Now it's a bike shop right across from the Rio Theater. It was in the Sentinel about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Ironically, when I first saw this incident mentioned in the Sentinel, I was kind of sympathetic with Hernandez in the sense that here's a guy who's taken direct action, engaging in civil disobedience, to tear down posters, but because he thought that they were they slighted women, is how he viewed it. As it developed, I came to think maybe it was a matter of his being sexually repressed, and he didn't like the way women were shown for other reasons. But initially, I thought, well, you know, here's a guy who, you know, like some of us go out in the streets and serve soup because people are hungry and the city council or the health department won't issue permits, but we, you know, people are hungry, they need to eat. And again, the issue is not entirely one of challenging unjust laws. It's a matter of doing what needs to be done in spite of a whole matrix of laws that can be used politically, like the laws against feeding people are used in, are apparently in San Jose, they're trying to use this law about, well, they pull laws out of their hats. I suspect they're going to try to use the food facility permit law, a state law that was used against Santa Cruzans here in 1988. Anyway, Hernandez wasn't engaging in civil disobedience, really. He was taking direct action, and then he was kind of ducking on the whole issue. And the Sentinel apparently suppressed the whole story until he arranged some sort of deal whereby he gave money or some benefits to Galt School as a kind of a, you know, beneficent cover move. Now, I got to admit, I'm prejudiced against Michael Hernandez. I don't think he's ever returned a phone call to me since he became city council member. I think he takes utterly stupid positions on numerous issues, specifically homeless issues. And, for example, he held that people on the east side are not busted for sleeping. An ignorant statement at best, but in my mind a stupid one, because I think he's been informed otherwise about that issue, and he would be if he went and talked to people around Staff of Life who are harassed in that area. And I don't know, just went and talked to some of the people at City Council who stand in line to discuss the issue at Oral Communications. I'm not aware he has ever done that. He claimed to support a campground for the homeless, but has taken no action, nor has Celia Scott, for that matter, our great liberal, to make any changes that would result in that kind of situation, though I understand is at the Poganip, the Greenbelt Committee,
She's taking a stand for the Homeless Garden Project, which, of course, is a campground for a few homeless people, but not for the great overwhelming majority. Anyway, that was a discussion of police abuse at City Council, and we have more of that coming up, which I'm going to have to cue up. So I'm going to give us a little more of Charlie King's music, and then we'll hear more discussion at City Council, this time of the police fountain, a new $68,000-plus fountain going in at the new police station. $68,000, not of federal money, but of your city money.
This woman pulled a fire and wondered only yesterday. There ain't no doubt she is happy, ain't nothing really wrong. But the dancing light inside her eyes, it's hard sometimes just to survive. Oh, the dancing light is gone. I'm an old woman, I believe, old as the year 78. Hear what I say. I was born in Laurel, Mississippi. I live in North Carolina today with my grandson, James. Now about children. I had five children before the Great Depression. Five more since then. All of them are living now. But the one that died in the war, all the rest had children too. Don't blame the children.
And now, as promised, second part of City Council. This, again, was the issue of the fountain, and interestingly enough, the mayor was not going to allow any public comment until reminded by Celia Scott that there was indeed a public comment section on this issue. First to speak on the issue is David Silva.
All right. Go ahead.
Taking out some people out.
Go ahead.
I'm having a little trouble with the tape, so I'm going to stall for a minute and maybe make a few announcements here. You're tuned, as you probably know, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Free Radio Santa Cruz exists through the devotion of a small collective of folks and your interest as well. You can give us a call at 427-4523. You can call me if you want to talk about my show at 423-4833. And we're going to get back to City Council in just a moment after a few notes from the Mime Troupe.
There's no room for compromise. To fight for food and freedom, or join the other side. Those who choose the middle, in this raging fight, will find their side is chosen, for the middle serves the right.
No hay centro.
There's no center in this fight.
Muchachos, el baile de la caña.
Yeah.
7144 Belmont Street. I love albums, and to me the most memorable time in my time in UCLA was that reverse fountain in front of the psychology department. It's one of the most peaceful times I had at UCLA. It's much more stressful being a police officer than it is being a student, so I think police officers deserve some place where they can find some peace. Unfortunately, the building of this police building, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there are some serious environmental health issues with the people that work inside the police building, since it's a completely sealed building and glue that will be used for the rugs is the same glue that has caused so many illnesses in the county with employees. And as SEIU has not had an environmental health officer for a couple years now, I think maybe something slipped through the cracks. If there's anything done about it at this stage, I'm probably a day late and a dollar short. It would be nice. But it seems if you have a completely contained building, when you're putting down those carpets and you have those kind of glues that you end up causing autoimmune disorders and CFIDs and all these kinds of problems, you end up costing the city and your insurance companies a lot of money. So this is great for their mental health and it's eventually for their physical health, but I think we should look at that building a little carefully.
Council members, my name is Robert Norris, still with SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. It seems kind of an ill-suited priority here to have this kind of money being spent on a fountain, $68,000, and we're in the midst of a shelter crisis with people sleeping on the streets, and there's no legal shelter for 95% of the homeless people in Santa Cruz. We have a nasty winter coming up, and now we find the council spending money on fountains. Specifically about this fountain, since the design is being discussed, since the artist is here, nothing personal, I don't know if he's ever had any direct hands-on experience with the Santa Cruz police force. I think rather than a seven-sided star press, a pentagram might be more in order at this point. And in terms of a statue or a sculpture on it, might be more appropriate to have a police chief tearing up a code book, as Chief Belcher did 2 years ago, when he essentially single-handedly changed the whole complaint process without informing us, or perhaps an officer disrobing a woman. We know that Sergeant Baker received complaints of sexual abuse from 10 women, which this council initially was going to investigate but never did, or possibly a sergeant spraying pepper spray directly into the eyes of a homeless activist, which two activists felt that spray from not officers but sergeants on the police force in the spring of 1994. So I think that the artist, with all respect to him, might be better suited to consider the realities of what our police force is doing. Indeed, even the unpleasant realities, because that, I think, is what we have to consider day to day on the streets. Again, spending $68,000 on this kind of extravagance, I think, shows the true priorities of this council.
And that was me and David Silva at Tuesday's council meeting. Of course, nobody else said a word about anything that I saw, unfortunately. But perhaps it was because those of us who spoke were ignored anyway. I don't know. I tend to do it to make a record. I tend to do it because I think the issues have to be raised. David actually gets response from council members, so I kind of commend him. But perhaps he wouldn't get the response he does if I didn't come on with the hard edge. So they feel they have to deal with one of us, and they deal with him. Who knows? Well, not much time left. We're going into our last half hour of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, Civil Rights for Poor People in Santa Cruz. Did a lot of taping yesterday, as I said, of trip to San Jose and then up to San Francisco. I've been just abashed and aghast at this latest organized smear against homeless people coming out of San Francisco around Golden Gate Park. In order to understand this, you have to understand that there was this Matrix program, which was universally hated by the homeless and really condemned by religious figures, by social service providers, by ordinary people of conscience. The Matrix program under former Mayor Jordan, in which homeless people had their property seized and destroyed, were arrested for sitting or sleeping,
where Food Not Bombs, the organization volunteer group that was serving people free food, was arrested and their food destroyed, all in an attempt to move homeless people away, out of sight, out of San Francisco, to declare first the downtown and then other areas of San Francisco a forbidden zone for the homeless, kind of like what they do for Serbs in Croatia and for Croats and Muslims in Serbia and various other groups in Bosnia, not to the extent of killing the people directly, but hey, how much further is it when you destroy people's homes and put them into a position where they can't sleep at night? How soon does that kind of abuse and exposure lead to life-threatening illnesses, mental conditions, problems of all kinds that ultimately kill people? We know here in Santa Cruz, activist Dan Hopkins, who I've called Dragon's Heart Dan, head of the City Hall Sleepers protest, he feels that I think it was between 10 and 15 people died as a consequence of the closing of the Coral Street open-air shelter, the property that had been open for 2 years, or 2 summers, and spring and fall, 94 and 95, where homeless people were able to set up a campground and sleep at night without being harassed by the police or by vigilantes. They didn't have to deal with drunks. They didn't have to deal with a kind of thuggish behavior by folks inside the campground occasionally. They didn't have to deal with wretched conditions, but they had a community of sorts and a place to be. Anyway, up in San Francisco, there's a similar situation in Golden Gate Park, where there's a large park area where people try to hide out and sleep. Well, Ken Garcia, a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, has come up with this raging column in late October, which I thought I'd brought with me. I've been looking for it. I'm having trouble finding it, so I'm going to kind of quote it by memory. Perhaps other broadcasters have spoken of it. I've seen it here in the studio. It calls the Golden Gate Park has become a kind of a hangout, a den of parolees and fire starters and junkies. And certainly there are junkies. In fact, you're about to hear an interview with a woman who's a junkie, a young junkie in San Francisco. But the situation is considerably different from that painted in the paper. These kind of scare stories are reminiscent of what were used in the media in Nazi Germany in the 30s to smear Jews and socialists and communists and spread a kind of massive fear that ultimately resulted in the Nazi government there, along with the economic conditions, of course, and the internal machinations of politicians and big business. Here in San Francisco, the background is, under Jordan, you had a program that actually was a step up from an intensification of the hostility against the homeless that had been still the policy under the former mayor, Art Agnos, when Food Not Bombs was arrested and when the vehicle dwellers of in the Golden Gate Park Panhandle area were driven away, although Art Agnos resisted that for 6 months, to his credit. Jordan stepped up the pressure on the homeless. Then we had Mayor Brown, who supposedly was going to be, you know, a liberal. Brown came in, and so did District Attorney Terrence Hallinan, who had actually served food with Food Not Bombs. He hadn't been arrested because they didn't want to arrest a supervisor. He was a supervisor then. And under Brown, we were supposed to be a change in policy. Well, Brown did stop arresting Food Not Bombs people, generally, although apparently some Food Not Bombs people, like Keith McHenry, were getting endless tickets whenever he showed up at rallies. His vehicle was towed and ticketed and so forth. But the food itself was not taken, and Food Not Bombs as an organization did not seem to be as much of a target. However, the number of tickets for sleeping and so-called quality of life matrix offenses in the first year after the Brown administration came into power was double that those given out under the Jordan administration. And this year, 2 years later, it's 2.5 times as many. So suddenly, for a story to appear in the San Francisco Chronicle claiming that Mayor Brown is somehow light and soft on campers in Golden Gate Park is utterly ridiculous. And it's sort of it shows a hard right-wing shift in somebody's agenda there. Now, I've heard, talking to Richard Edmondson of Free Radio San Francisco, which is actually Liberation Radio is what they call it. He interviewed me earlier today, and we talked a bit, and I also talked to Andy Rose of Food Not Bombs. These two men said that there have been meetings between the middle-level police officials in San Francisco and the Parks Department and possibly some merchants in the last couple of months. And these are the middle-level police officers are the ones that directed the whole campaign against Food Not Bombs in San Francisco, which, for those of you who don't know, was an amazing attack on a very simple kind of sharing of food. I mean, Food Not Bombs does have a political message, you know, food, not bombs, no question about it. But what they were doing, mostly, is they were distributing food to poor people. And in some cases, they fed people who were in public places on a 24-hour basis in 1989 and 1990 when encampments formed in Civic Center Plaza Park right across from the mayor's office. So they were regarded as supporting these encampments, and then Food Not Bombs had to be eliminated, and so they got an injunction, the city did, against Food Not Bombs. But mainly, this is a very elemental kind of charity thing. We aren't talking about characters with guns and knives, bombs, and plans to overthrow the government. We're talking about people with carrots who give vegetarian meals. I mean, it is really amazing the kinds of enemies the government is choosing here. Instead of choosing poverty, instead of choosing injustice as the enemy, they're choosing the very people who are fighting those kinds of things, which leads the naive to believe that, it leads anyone to believe that those who challenge institutionalized injustice, even through vegetarian food, are likely to get the shaft and have gotten the shaft. So, anyway, I went up to San Francisco yesterday with a group of people just to see what was going on in Golden Gate Park. We had heard that the park was being massively depopulated by the police, that people with backpacks and bedrolls and shopping carts were being rousted and driven out of the park, which is illegal and unconstitutional. You cannot do that to people just because they're poor. But the San Francisco police were doing that to people. We're going to hear some interviews. Well, actually, we probably have only time for this one interview with Valerie. And the very significant aspect of this interview that I heard and that I'm going to try to put into a story, and I'm going to write one up, similar to the story I wrote about the Eureka South Spit Jetty, and you can now read in the new Street Spirit on the front page. Can't get it downtown at the Cinema 9 from your local homeless vendor in front of the Cinema 9. What I'm going to put into the story is the testimony of this woman, which was, and I've heard it from other sources as well recently, that the so-called needles found in these homeless camps, in case you've been reading the San Francisco Chronicle, were for drug exchange. That is, they were all, they claimed to have found 1,000 needles, and then they modified that figure to 300 needles. Well, I heard the figure was around 450, and I heard it from a woman who claimed to have been at the camp where the needles were found. She said that they were a needle exchange group operating there. If that's so, it is such a huge smear being used, consciously used, to turn the hatred and fear of the community against the poorest people in San Francisco who live in the park. Very, very ominous kind of thing going on here. Let's listen to this interview with Valerie of San Francisco that I recorded last night. That is, if we can get the right tape.
For action.
And I'm working on it. I know it's around here somewhere. Yep, here it is. Stay tuned, gang. Don't leave me behind.
Okay, it's about 9:15. We're at Hayton Schrader, and I'm talking to
Valerie.
And Valerie, you're here after a hard day at the park, right?
Yes, I am.
What happened today in Golden Gate Park?
Well, as I'm sure everybody is well aware, starting December 1st, they're going to begin construction on the Alvord Lake area of Golden Gate Park, right on Stanyan, the front of the park. They're fencing it completely off and turning it into a skating rink, and right now they're trying to get us all out of the park as quickly as possible. They're having random shakedowns on people coming through, trying to bust everybody as much as possible. They do that a lot anyways, but right now they're doing it a lot more than usual. They came through today not only with their random arresting people, which they arrested a couple of people today without even reading them their rights or anything. They've been doing a lot of that lately. There's been a lot of police brutality.
How long have you been in San Francisco?
Well, I've been here this time for about 10 months, but I've been here before. But And it's just getting worse as far as the police go. Like today they came through, they had the police come through, and then they had a bunch of garbage trucks come through. They were picking up anything that somebody literally was not holding on to, that it could be right by them. And people were begging them, you know, let me sort through my shit and see what, you know, I need. They were throwing away people's family pictures, you know, their ID, their birth certificates, a lot of irreplaceable things, that what little belongings we do have. They, you know, a lot of people have nothing besides what they had, and they just throw it all into the trash compactor and start pushing down on it, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. They're trying to get us out of there as quickly as possible.
And luckily you escaped with your stuff.
Yeah, actually, I'm one of the fortunate few who have a storage unit, and also I keep a lot of my stuff in my friend's truck, and what I did have with me, I had in my hands, and I was not going to put down for anything.
And have you been sleeping out in the park yourself?
Yes, Valerie.
Valerie?
And yes, I have.
And have you yourself suffered any harassment before today?
Yes, they like to come through and search us all the time because us people hanging out in the front of the park, they figure we're all a bunch of junkies or depending on what, if we hang out by the bathrooms, they figure automatically we're a bunch of tweakers, or me and my friends who hang out right at the front on the corner of Haight and Stanyan, they figure we're a bunch of strung out junkies selling drugs to support our habit, which may or may not be true. It, but, you know, that's what they automatically assume about everybody there, and they like to fuck with us as much as possible.
What kind of harassment have you suffered in terms of, have you gotten any tickets, let's say, in the last?
Yes, I've gotten several tickets. If you're in the park after 10, they give you a ticket. If they catch you sleeping, you get a ticket for that. And now, because you can turn those tickets into the Coalition for the Homeless, they're starting to write out traffic tickets for driving without a license for sleeping in the park, because you cannot have those tickets removed. And regardless of the fact that none of these people are driving in the first place, all they're doing is camping in the park because we have nowhere else to go. You know, we need that park. That park's how we make our money. That park's how we survive. That park's how we get our food. That park's how we manage to take showers, stay clean. You know, the park's how we survive, but, you know, they want to take it away from us.
You've read the stories in the Chronicle about fires and hypodermic needles and, quote, parolees and violence.
Actually, I have something to say as far as the syringes. There was a story about a week back on the front page of the Chronicle that said that they raided a camp, which was actually my camp. I stopped staying there, but it's my old camp, and a lot of my friends were staying there. And yes, there was not over 1,000 hypodermic needles. There was about 450 dirty hypodermic needles, but they made it sound like they were scattered all over the ground. What they neglected to say is that there was also clean needles, and that they were in Sharps collectors. We were doing needle exchange. It's not like they were just laying all over the ground everywhere.
What do you suspect is the reason for this latest series of articles? Is it just one columnist who's got a bug up his butt, or is there some other agenda behind this?
I think they're trying to create mass hysteria. They're trying to give the, as we call them, the yuppies, you know, the rich people who don't know what's going on with it. And actually, we call them yuppie scum, but that's besides the point. But you know, they're trying to get mainstream society to view us as, you know, a bunch of crackheads, you know, living in the park who are going to rob you, steal your purse, and eat your children. That's basically how they're portraying us, not in those exact words.
What's the crime situation in the park? You live there, candidly speaking, you're a woman. Do you feel safe in the park? And you've lived there for 10 months, but, I mean, how do you feel about it?
Actually, I feel very safe living in the park. I feel safer living in the park than anywhere I've ever lived before, including when I was living in a house. I have my street family, which is the best family I've ever had to back me and protect me. Nothing bad has happened to me. I've never been assaulted. I haven't been raped or anything like that in the park. You know, I feel totally safe and at home in the park.
What about your sense of other people?
Other people? I feel just everybody safe in the park, just about, unless, you know, unless they do something to make themselves unsafe, unless they put themselves in a situation that's going to be unsafe with parks.
In Santa Cruz, where I come from, there's been an upsurge in the use of heroin. Is that the case here in San Francisco?
I wouldn't say necessarily an upsurge. I will admit that there is a lot of heroin usage. I'm a heroin addict myself, and yeah, a lot of people use heroin, but we're not like, you know, you gotta realize a junkie's not how, you know, it's portrayed to be, you know, we're not sitting, like I said, you know, rob you and eat your children, you know. Yeah, we're just, you know, we leave everybody alone, we just make our money, get our dope, get our food, whatever, you know, and survive and stay well, but, you know, we don't bother anybody. I don't see why they're bothering us so much.
Classical picture of people using heroin in a society where heroin is illegal is that they have to steal an extensive amount in order to purchase heroin and maintain a habit each day. Is this accurate?
I have stolen